We shall now resume. And the first speaker of this second session is Alpha Yap from Brisbane. He came from a long, long distance. So we are very fortunate to have him with us. And he will be giving us an opportunity to listen to forces. Do we have to listen very carefully about forces? And anyway, he will be talking about how mechanosensing makes cells into tissues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Thomas. Everyone who knows me knows you don't have to listen very closely. It's not worth that much. But let me thank Thomas for the great honor of being here. It's wonderful to be part of the symposium and an honor to be here at the Collège de France. And what I'd like to do for the next few minutes is to ask you to change the perspective of your thinking a little bit, to move from the cellular level to the supracellular level of tissues, and particularly in our case, of epithelia that you know is the sort of the first organ of the early embryo, but also the basis for morphogenesis and also for many of the barriers within the body, the gut, the skin, the kidneys, and so forth. Epithelia are, as well as being physiologically important, they are the source of common human diseases, cancer, inflammation, so epithelia are interesting, despite the enormous challenges that they have being those fundamental tissue barriers. In addition to being connected to the extracellular matrix by cell matrix adhesions, such as we've heard discussed by Heise and Sasha this morning, another defining feature of epithelia is the fact that their constituent cells are connected to one another by cell-cell adhesion systems. There are many cell-cell adhesion systems, and the ones that we focus on purely out of a sense of historical proprietariness are the cadherin cell-cell adhesion molecules. And this is the sort of the classic textbook cartoon that you'll see where cadherins, in this case epithelial or e-cadherins, presented on the surfaces of neighboring cells, connect those cells to one another, and the tails of the cadherins on the cytoplasmic surface ultimately connect to the actin and the actomyosin cytoskeleton. This is the so-called core canonical cadherin-catenin complex. It's also extremely simplistic, and there are a very large number of other molecules, signaling, trafficking, and cytoskeletal regulators that will connect to the cadherin cytoplasmic tail. As an adhesion molecule, the fundamental concept in adhesion, of course, is that adhesion molecules resist force. Commonly in tissues, even in non-biological tissues such as cultured epithelial cells, the patterns of force seen at those junctions appears to be tensile. And you get a sense of that if you simply use a laser to cut a junction, as Guillermo Gomez has done here, and you see a pattern of recoil, suggesting that, again, these were fully confluent cultured steady-state epithelial cells, suggesting that even under those circumstances, the junctions are seeing some kind of tensile force. Those forces, back in the day when I started working in cell biology, we had assumed that those forces were in large part extrinsic to the cell, such as you might imagine might be occurring here, the sort of forces that occur when large-scale, the sort of forces cells experience when large-scale external forces are applied. I think, though, over the last perhaps 10 years, a major revelation in my field has been the realization that many of those tensile forces are actually being generated by the cells that make up the epithelia themselves. And ultimately, what this reflects is, as you will imagine from the talks that you've heard this morning, a process of coupling whereby the principal force generator within cells, or the principal contractile force generator, is actomyosin. And actomyosin generates force because the antiparallel organization of myosin motors will slide filaments inward, therefore generating a contractile force. The dominant principles needed for force generation are then obviously both actin binding and filament sliding. And the ability of myosin or actomyosin to generate tensile forces on junctions requires that they be physically coupled to those adhesion systems, and that occurs probably via a number of molecular mechanisms. A range of patterns of actomyosin can generate tensile forces on those junctions. They include the patterns of medial apical actin that that labs such as Tomas have described in especially dynamic epithelia, and they also include populations of actomycin that can be found decorating the cell-cell junctions themselves. But I guess the larger biological question is, how do you use this coupling of actomycin and adhesion? How do you use the tension that might be generated as a result? And many of you who have been to particularly say to Tomas' lectures, but many other talks in the field, will know that patterns of junctional tension have recently been implicated as fundamental determinants of morphogenesis. They influence local cellular arrangements, as Tomas, Jens Allen, and Bob Goldstein have shown in various embryonic systems, and they can indeed be organized at tissue scale levels to control tissue levels of developmental patterning, as Martin showed a few years ago. Now, that's in development, and I accept that development is not unimportant, but I'd like to ask you to consider what might the forces, the tensile forces that we can see even in steady state epithelia, such as in culture or in our skin, gut, or lungs, what purpose might they serve? And we've been entranced in the last few years by this hypothesis. We've had this idea that epithelia are essentially tensile networks or networks of tension at their junctions established by coupling, as I say, of actomycin to adhesion. And we've wondered, is it possible that if there is some sort of steady state level of tension, is it possible that that could be regarded as a set point? And therefore, is it possible that cells and tissues might be able to detect deviations from that set point of tension, either an increase in junctional tension or perhaps even a decrease in junctional tension? And the kind of the hypothesis that we'd like to promulgate is one in which perhaps there might be local changes in contractility for some reason or other, pathologic or pathophysiologic, that might be transmitted through the junctions to the neighbors and detected by those neighbors. And if that is the case, then we'd really want to be able to establish at least three things. We'd want to be able to identify patterns of force that, or changes in force that map in space and time with some sort of biological outcome. We want to identify an apparatus that is able to detect those changes in force, and we want that to have some sort of biological purpose. So that's kind of ultimately the goal of what we would be trying to achieve with prosecuting this hypothesis. Now, one of the contexts that has captured our attention is the phenomenon of apoptosis. And apoptosis is a fundamental feature of life. It commonly occurs in single cells, such as lymphocytes, T cells, and fibroblasts. But apoptosis also occurs in epithelia. And it occurs both when cells die as they might, but also when they're induced to die by the toxic, noxious environment that epithelia have to encounter. And typically, apoptosis is relatively sporadic. One or a few cells will die surrounded by normal cells. And immunologically, it's commonly regarded as a silent phenomenon, but at least from the point of view of an epithelial biologist, having a few cells die in your midst is not necessarily a good thing. It poses two kinds of challenges. One is that it potentially compromises the barrier. Even losing one or two cells is enough to electrically short-circuit a barrier and start to affect fluid transport, as well as let bugs and other bad things into one's precious bodily fluid. And the other problem is that when apoptotic cells die, the corpses, if they are retained, can be sources both of secondary necrosis, inflammation, and even autoimmune, systemic lupus erythematosus-like responses. So apoptosis is not necessarily a good thing to have. What we know, particularly from work initiated by Jody Rosenblatt nearly 20 years ago, is that epithelia have ways of dealing with the apoptotic enemy within. And they deal with it by a process that's called apical extrusion. And Guillermo Gomez is going to kill a couple of cells here by shining a laser upon them. And what you'll see is that the response of the epithelium is for the apoptotic cells to round up and then to be physically expelled from the epithelium into the environment and basically sloughed off. And you see it perhaps a little more closely in this movie made by King Dusic, in which she's adding annexin 5 to the medium. Annexin 5 is going to bind to serine that is expressed on the outer surface of cells as they undergo apoptosis. And what you'll see is that this cell is undergoing apoptosis because she's injured it with a laser. And you'll see perhaps more closely in the vertical views that as it undergoes apoptosis, as it starts to be marked, it then becomes physically expelled upwards into the environment to basically get rid of the damn thing. Now, this process of extrusion is, one might have predicted, a way of protecting an epithelium just by getting rid of potentially noxious cells from within it. And the apical direction will typically be into the environment, so you just get rid of what you don't want, dumping the stuff out of the plane that I've just been flying on. And indeed, it is protective, and one observation that suggests it is protective comes from this experiment that King has done. So what she's done here is she's taken zebrafish. These have been engineered to have neutrophils that are marked with GFP. She's going to injure the skin of the epithelium, I think somewhere around about here. And first of all, she's going to look to see whether any neutrophils come. And neutrophils are the classic mediators of innate immunity that are thought to be some of the first responders in the innate immune response. And so she's injured a cell here. It's going to be physically extruded from the epithelium into the environment, but nothing very much happens. No neutrophils come. In contrast, if she blocks the extrusion process and the apoptotic bodies are retained, then you start to see lots of neutrophils accumulating. So if, and I hesitate to say this if there are any immunologists here, but if epithelial extrusion works, the need for immune responses is substantially reduced. So, but that isn't to say that immunologists aren't very, very nice and useful people. So apoptotic extrusion is an interesting first response for epithelia to deal with the problem of apoptosis. They can eliminate corpses as well as maintain the barrier, as Jody showed many years ago. Importantly, extrusion isn't just about what happens to the injured cell, it's about how the neighbors respond to the presence of that injured cell. And one example of this is perhaps captured in this movie that was made by Maggie McLean in my group a few years ago. And what she's doing is looking at myosin, and she's identifying myosin by expressing a GFP tagged form of the regulatory light chain. In normal epithelia, well, I should say SETI-SETI epithelia, what you see is myosin concentrates in these bundles on either side of the apical cadherin junctions. But when MAG injures this cell to cause it to become apoptosis, what you see is that the actin from around the neighbors becomes reorganized. And perhaps, again, the vertical view is better. Two bundles of actin on either side of the apical junctions, neighbors, apoptotic cell, neighbors. But when the apoptotic extrusion response is activated, the neighbors generate this contractile cup that effectively squeezes out the badness. So that, of course, raises kind of interesting questions. It suggests that the extrusion response is non-cell autonomous. It's really a neighbor response. It's an example of how the behavior of individual cells might have to be coordinated within tissues to deal with a homeostatic response. And it implies that what we must be dealing with is some pathway in which a stimulus is elicited in the injured cell and it invokes a response in the neighbors. And ultimately, we must have something that looks sort of like this, right, where you've got stimulus, the neighbor response, and a variety of things in between that we need to try and figure out. Some of the elements of this we have known about for some years. And in particular, we and many of my colleagues have been interested in the idea that contractile forces generated when cells undergo apoptosis may be the source of, or may be a major signal that's transmitted to the neighbors. And we know this in part, or we suspect this in part, because just at the turn of the century, Mike Olson's lab, as well as Michel Barnier, demonstrate that when cells undergo apoptosis, one of the things that happens is that their pro-contractile kinases, like Rho kinase, are cleaved by caspases to make them constitutively active. So these cells become constitutively hypercontractile. You can see that in epithelia, because in this case, the apoptotic cells undergo blebbing, as you saw before. And importantly, you can reproduce the apoptotic or the extrusion response just by expressing a constitutively active Rho kinase that induces blebbing and also the generation of an actomyosin ring in the neighbors that ultimately will extrude this this transgene-expressing cell. So this is a cell that's hypercontractile but is not actually undergoing apoptosis. So force transmitted from a cell, perhaps an apoptotic cell to its neighbors, might be a stimulus for this neighbor cell response, but it's a stimulus that requires E-cadherin, because if you knock down E-cadherin, you can express the transgene, but the cell doesn't get extruded. And it's also been known for a while that if you knock down E-cadherin, that too will block apoptosis. So more recently, and this is now largely unpublished stuff, we've been trying to work out what might be the role that the cadherin plays in transmitting some sort of mechanical signal from the apoptotic cell to the neighbors. And that's work that's been driven particularly by King Adusic and Bipul Acharya in the group. So we wanted to try and identify a signal that might be found in the neighbors that would respond to the contractile stimulus from the apoptotic cell. And the signal that we liked as a candidate is the signal Rho that you've already heard about. And we liked it for a couple of reasons. The first is the Rho is a major activator of myosin. Neighbor cells activate myosin. You might have expected Rho might be involved. And now we're able to visualize Rho in cells rather better than we could, say, 10 years ago, because we have a variety of biosensors, including this location biosensor that's derived from the C-terminus of a Rho-binding protein, which is called anilin. And as you can see, it localizes very beautifully in steady-state epithelia in these apical junctions, which are where a lot of actomyosin is and which are the major sites of junctional tension within these cells. It also localizes during the process of apoptotic extrusion. Now, on the left here is the movie of apoptosis that I showed you before. And what King has done is take cells that will be her targets. She surrounded them with cells that express the Rho biosensor, but they themselves don't express the biosensor. So changes that she's going to see must be coming from the neighbors, not from the injured cell itself. And what you notice at the beginning is that there's the Rho signal at the apical junctions, as we and others have shown before. This is the vertical view. But when the target cell undergoes apoptosis, what you'll notice is that as the neighbors start to contract, they accumulate Rho at the interface with the apoptotic cell. And it's probably better seen, albeit shallowly, in the XZ views. So Rho is being activated in the neighbor cells, as you might have predicted that it would be if it was driving contractility to squeeze out the badness. So Rho was, as we had hoped, a likely candidate. And indeed, if you block Rho, you block the extrusion response. And what Kinger and Bipul then tried to do was to ask what might be the signaling pathway that was involved. And in particular, the first thing they asked was, could contractile forces activate Rho? Because, you know, what we had before was a nice correlation, but that didn't prove causality. Bipul, in particular, was concerned to try and identify a broader mechanotransduction pathway that might regulate Rho signaling. And so to do that, what he decided to do is to ignore the whole phenomenon of apoptosis and all the things that can happen. He said, what happens if I just alter forces on monolayers, either by universally increasing contractility in the epithelia by blocking myosin phosphatase so that to constitutively increase the phosphorylation of myosin. And this is what you see. If you stain for the phosphorylated active myosin. If you add this drug, colliculin, it goes up both at the junctions as well as in the bulk. And the other experiment that he did was simply to physically stretch the epithelium. But I'll just show you some of the colliculin data for now, in the interest of time. And indeed, what he finds is that within a relatively short period of time, within 5 to 10 minutes after increasing intrinsic contractility with collicula or stretching the epithelia, the Rho signal at the junctions increases. And the quantitation is here. That's the level of Rho in controls, and it goes up when tension is applied, and it goes up pretty quickly. So what that suggested to Bipul was that independent of the context of apoptosis, cells have a way of sensing tensile forces applied to junctions and increasing Rho signaling at those junctions. Of course, what he then had to do was to try and find the signaling pathway that was involved. Many of you will know about Rho and the small GDPases. You'll know that they're active when they're loaded with GDP. They are activated by guanine nucleotide exchange factors that exchange GDP for GTP, and that implied that the activation that was seen was might involve a GEF. So we went looking for candidates, and the candidate that we found was a GEF that's known as P114 Rho GEF. We like it because it goes up at junctions, which is under conditions in which Rho is going to go up. And importantly, if we make maneuvers such as deplete cells of P114 Rho GEF, the ability of tissue tension to activate junctional Rho is essentially abolished. And there are many ugly details that I will spare you. So P114, as we started to map the pathway, P114 was responsible, we think, for activating Rho at junctions. An important question is how it's localized to junctions, and I'll just tell you that the mechanism involved is a heterotrimeric G protein called G-alpha-12. And G-alpha-12 is interesting because it can bind directly to ECAT hearing. So that implied at this point that what we had was a force being exerted at junctions that was recruiting G-alpha-12 and P114 to the junctions where it could activate Rho and do some good stuff to get a mechanical response out of the cells. Perhaps the more interesting, this is kind of standard cell biological signal pathwayology, right? Perhaps the more interesting question was what came in between the arrows. There must be, we thought, a protein that was intrinsically able to sense and respond to forces that would ultimately couple to the Rho activation pathway. There must be a mechanosensor involved. And for various reasons that are all totally parochial, we were interested in myosins. And of the 30 or so myosins there are, we were particularly interested in an atypical myosin called myosin 6, because 10 years ago we found that it localizes to junctions, and it's an interesting myosin. It's a beautiful processive motor, so it's involved in cellular transport, moving things along actin, but it's also exquisitely sensitive to load, to force. When myosin 6 sees a load, it converts from being a nice processive motor to being essentially an actin-based anchor. So it has a very powerful intrinsic change in behavior that we thought could be kind of cool from our point of view if it were able, at junctions, to sense forces being applied to junctions. And again, I'll spare you too many of the details, but indeed in our hands it appears to be the relevant one. And I'll show you two pieces of data that speak to that. The first is the fact that if you deplete cells of myosin 6, the ability of stress to activate Rho signaling is abolished. So this is junctional Rho and controls, it goes up with stretch. It's totally abolished if cells are depleted of myosin signaling is abolished. So that implies that intrinsic force sensitivity of myosin 6 was relevant. The question then is how did that force sensor connect to the downstream elements of the pathway? And the hypothesis is that when myosin 6 stabilizes and couples to ECAT herin, it might promote the recruitment of this signaling pathway to the cadherin and hence to the junctions. And again, one piece of data, namely if we just do IPs, co-IPs, looking at the amount of G-alpha-12, the upstream Rho activator that binds to ECAT herin, it goes up when we apply force, but it doesn't go up if we knock down myosin 6 or replace the meiosis 6 with this force-insensitive mutant of myosin 6. So the pathway, we think, looks something like this, where myosin 6 is the tissue mechanosensor that then entrains this rogue signaling pathway. This would, as I mentioned before, be a kind of a universal thing. The question, of course, is whether it's relevant for apoptosis. And again, just two little pieces of data to suggest that it may be. If we look at the Rho activation response in those neighbor cells, here we've changed from global epithelia to apoptosis, then the Rho response in the neighbors is abolished if you deplete the neighbors of myosin 6, and the extrusion response is also abolished if the neighbors don't have myosin 6. So let me finish. So what I'd like to suggest is that apical extrusion or apoptotic extrusion represents a way in which a sort of a basal mechanosensing property of cell-cell junctions can be used for tissue homeostasis. And more generally, we would postulate that these kind of mechanosensors might be interesting for other challenges to homeostasis, such as infection or even transformation, because mechanosensing allows changes in junctional tension to be detected. And there are some beauties to mechanics, as of course you know better than I. It allows events to be detected at some sort of distance, and in some sense, mechanics can signal irrespective of the chemistry of the insult. If any of this is true, if any of this goes anywhere, then everything is due to the people in my lab who do all of this, and occasionally let me out to tell their story and hope I don't get it too wrong. Thank you so much for your patience. Anywhere, then everything is due to the people in my lab who do all of this, and occasionally let me out to tell their story and hope I don't get it too wrong. Thank you so much for your patience.